Lee, thanks for joining us, and let's get right to it with Darcy Kuemper. Is he, like I've said earlier, that they could have put 20 Bud Light cans in the net and still would have got a shutout Saturday night. Is that fair or unfair to Darcy Kuemper?
The real question is, could they have put Kevin Woodley in net after drinking 20 Bud Lights?
As long as you didn't move, you would have been, been fine.
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest with you. I don't know if I'd go to that extreme.
Okay.
But for sure, it reminded me of Game 2 against the Oilers, where a lot of the buzz that came out of that game was about, you know, Pavel Francouz taking over for Darcy Kuemper and getting a shutout. And then when we saw the metrics from Clearsight Analytics the next day and realized just how little, well, frankly, nothing the Oilers generated in that game. If I remember correctly, it was zero high-danger chances and one mid-danger chance. And certainly game two of the Stanley Cup final felt the same for Darcy Kuemper. It was one high-danger chance and one mid-danger chance, and then just a bunch of easy ones. And so, there's certainly an element of the Colorado Avalanche, and we talked about this going into the series when all the questions were, who starts? Is it Kuemper or Francouz? And my answer was, I don't know that it matters, because they basically built a team that can win not just with average goaltending, but they're two wins from a cup final, and neither one of their goaltenders has even reached the level of average. They are both, out of the 30 goalies to play in the Stanley Cup playoffs so far, Francouz and Kuemper are 22nd and 23rd in adjusted save percentage, and both of them are negative numbers. So now that's not to totally discount what they're doing. Like, in games like that where you're not busy, you know, could something have turned the other way in a hurry if you let in a low danger chance? I mean, we've talked about that. You know, that was one of the things that really plagued Mike Smith in these playoffs. Still leads the entire playoffs in low danger chances that ended up in the net. I think it was at 9. And so Kuemper and Francouz get credit for at least not, you know, making mistakes. And there are certainly times when your team's dominating the way the Avalanche have done, where it would be easy to sort of fall asleep a little bit mentally, even in a cup final, as much as you would think it's, you know, hey, what are you talking about? It's a cup final. Everything's on the line. You can concentrate for 60 minutes. And it's not easy to keep your focus for 60 minutes, especially when so little of the game is commanding your focus. And so they deserve credit for that. But certainly when we assess, you know, at the end of these playoffs, nobody's going to be talking about, you know, if it is the Avs that finish this off, there's going to be no arguments for the goaltender to be even a part of the Conn Smythe decision. And that's a credit to the team the Avs have built. And I think a credit to Jared Bednar for his ability to get that team so loaded with offensive talent to buy in defensively from the top right on down. They are really tough to play against. They don't give up much. They don't defend necessarily in that sort of hard physical manner, but they make it very difficult for you to get to the front of the net, to the areas in the high slot and sort of that upper mid home plate area, especially the middle of the ice, to get quality scoring chances. And I'm fascinated to see what kind of adjustments we see out of Tampa Bay tonight, whether that will be enough. But at the end of the day, regardless of how this plays out, what the Avs have done has shown you that you don't necessarily need really, really high-end goaltending if you've built a team with this much incredible depth and commitment to defensive detail. Because you can have all the skill in the world, but if guys don't want to take away those chances and work hard to come back and, you know, create that back pressure that makes it so hard for Tampa to gain the zone and make any moves once they do, none of it matters. So between the coaching and the personnel, they basically created an environment where the goalie just has to not make a lot of mistakes, at least so far in these playoffs. And like I said, we're two wins for them away from hoisting the Stanley Cup, and neither goalie has played above expected.
What about on the other side? As we're joined by Kevin Woodley, Vasilevskiy, how much should he be wearing of at being down 2-0 in this series?
I don't put game one on him nearly as much as others seem to, or at least in terms of the narrative that emerged out of that game, especially early on, you know, because he'd never given up 3 goals in the first period. I think because the second goal goes through 5 hole, I was actually a little alarmed at how quickly people were to sort of jump on describing that as a struggling Andrei Vasilevskiy. Like, okay, the first goal goes under his arm, and he ends up, you know, the guy ends up lying behind him, gets tapped in behind him. And I realize that doesn't look good because it goes through him. But even on that one, like, there was a flash screen. His own player sort of cuts right across his field of vision just as the puck is being released, which is outside of a layered screen that leaves you blind to any chance of seeing the puck, might be the, you know, the next toughest screen you can have. And so the first one goes in that way. The second one, a, you know, wide open look from the high slot, and clearly you watch it, Sturdy. You watch that shot release, you watch the hand position, you watch the blade angle. That puck is headed high glove, and Vasilevskiy reacts high glove, and Bogosian reaches his stick in, hits the stick, deflects five hole, and all of a sudden we're talking about Andre Vasilevskiy quote unquote struggling. Right. Third goal is a 5-on-3 after extended pressure backdoor tap in. And yet again, Andre Vasilevskiy struggling. I didn't buy it in game one. I didn't think those were on him, but obviously in game two, I mean, beaten clean, low blocker, you know, far side off the rush on a couple. That wasn't his best game. And they're going to need better because, unlike Colorado, they are a team, at least at this point, because the Avs over the past couple of years, the Lightning over the past couple of years, one of the things that I don't think has been talked about enough is how good defensively they became, especially after that sweep against Columbus. They really doubled down on preventing the type of high-quality chances that, you know, specifically lead to most offense in the NHL. A lot of, you know, lateral plays and things that teams are trying to create. They did a really good job of cutting them down. But they are still overall a team that leans on goaltending, and they're going to need better out of, as much as I'm quick to defend Vasilevskiy after game one, they're obviously going to need better than what he gave them in game two if they have any chance of coming back in this series.
Joined by Kevin Willey from In Goal Magazine, taking a look at the world of goaltending through his eyes here on the Jason Greger Show on TSN 1260. You know, there's reports going around that Florida is willing to eat half of Bobrovsky's current deal, which has 4 years left at $10 million, that they're willing to make a move to make that happen. At this point, you know, of Bobrovsky's career, knowing what he's done and what he could do, or projecting what he could do, would this be someone, if Smith retires, the Oilers should take a look at?
Yeah, you know, like, that's a tough one. You know, even if those reports are accurate, if the word is accurate that they are willing to eat such a high number on that contract, you're still looking at, you know, 4 more years at $5 million. And the reality is, even this season, which was a quote-unquote bounce back for Sergei Bobrovsky statistically with the Florida Panthers compared to the previous two, you know, his 9/11 save percentage, yes, it was you know, significantly higher, or not say significantly, it was above league average. I think that finished at 907. So you're getting an above average goaltender when you look at the raw numbers. Actually, my apologies. Regular season was 913. 911 was playoff. So that's a pretty impressive number. Like, 913 is not bad. You know, $5 million. If you look at the goalies in the league that are making around $5 million, you know, if that's what you're sort of comparing, at half the salary, you're talking about the Robin Lehner, Thatcher Demko's, UC Saros, Cal Peterson, Linus Ullmark, you know, like goalies that Bob should be comparable to. But the reality of the past three seasons, and even this year, when you break down this season and you look at sort of some of the advanced numbers relative to shot quality, because Florida, we know how good they were this year, in terms of not just offensively, but defensively, they had the puck so much, they didn't give up a ton. He's actually slightly below expected. Not a bunch, but just a little bit, which sort of puts him 36th in the league out of 70 goalies that saw more than 300 shots in the regular season. And so if you ask yourself, even at that steep a discount, even if the Panthers are willing to eat that kind of money, it's still a lot to pay for a guy who is still below expected in terms of shot quality. And when you look at some of the other, the problem is it's not a really deep market in terms of unrestricted free agents. And so that's where you see, you know, some shopping being done potentially for trade partners. And are other goalies going to be available on the trade market if we can't find our answer in free agency? And when it comes to this particular goalie, I still think there's a, you know, we talked about a little bit about with John Gibson last week, you know, some of the risks associated with the term left on that contract and the inconsistencies in his game. I would put Sergei Bobrovsky in the same conversation. I think I like his game technically a little better. I think it should be more consistent. But the reality is the high level of play just hasn't been there statistically, even in a bounce back season this year, to justify, what's going to be, what would put him sort of, in that, not quite top 10, but 10 to 15 range in terms of pay scale at the National Hockey League level for a starting goalie.
One last one for you. We know tomorrow the Vezina's rolling out. Is there any reason to believe that it will not be wearing Shesterkin's name on it when the official announcement made at the entire?
If for any reason Igor Shesterkin does not win the Vezina Trophy, then all the rants you've heard me do over the years about taking that voting right away from National Hockey League general managers will be screamed from the rooftops. Over and over again, perhaps in perpetuity until they do take that voting right away, because it would be a colossal mistake. I don't think it's even possible. His year was, not only did he have a great Vezina Trophy worthy campaign, he had one of the great seasons all time in terms of NHL goalies. Like, that's how good it was. Enough that, and I get it, I don't think he'll win the Hart. I'm not even arguing he should win the Hart when he started as few games as he did. And that's just in some ways, that's a function of the shifting landscape of the NHL in terms of what starters are expected to play. But the reality is, like, his save percentage, I think he finished at 936 compared to league average of 907. Like, that's a 29-point bump above league average. That's bigger than Hasek was compared to league average in either of the seasons where he won the Hart Trophy. The gap between him and second place in save percentage is 10 points. That's equal to Hasek's largest gap while winning the Hart Trophy. All those numbers are better than any of the other Hart Trophy winning goalies, whether it's Jose Theodore or Carey Price. He really did have a historically great season as a goaltender. And so, as much as I don't expect him to win the Hart, I think he was very deserving of a lot of Hart votes, and wouldn't be surprised if he's at least in that mix, like high up when we see the final tabulation. But as far as the Vezina Trophy, that's got to be, it absolutely has to be a slam dunk. There was nobody better in the league. There were some goalies that pushed for a while. I think in the final 2 weeks of the season, there was a point where UC Saros had sort of closed the gap on goals saved above expected on Igor Shesterkin. But he faded down the stretch as those minutes piled up and the workload became too much. And Shesterkin, after a little bit of rest, went on a late season heater that just basically allowed him to lap the field. I don't have it in front of me, but I think his goal save above expected by ClearSight's numbers finished around 36 or 37. And that's just unbelievable, especially given that's a cumulative stat and he didn't play as much as some other guys. Just a remarkable season. And if anything short of a Vezina Trophy win and a decisive one were to emerge when the ballots are unveiled and the voting is unveiled, like I said, I will be screaming from the rooftop that that should be the last time the GMs get to vote for this award.
Woodley, we appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll check with you next week.
Perfect. Thanks, Trudy.